Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Welcome in. It's the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network, KeystoneSportsNetwork.com, the Keystone Sports app. I'm Dustin Hawkins with Jim Galante here with me to get started today. Looking back at Penn State Purdue, 35-7 Penn State wins. They're 5-0, a real glass half full, glass half empty situation. So I'm eager to get Jimbo's take on that. We're going to hear plenty from James Franklin. We're going to break down his post-game press conference with some clips from him and our thoughts on what he had to say after this game, which, again, 35-7 was the final score, 21-0. Penn State jumped out to a big lead. We're coming to you, by the way, from Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Bleed blue and white. Drink blue and light. Were you bleeding blue and white as things were grinding to a halt in the second half of this game? Like, how did you feel about that dynamic? Are you looking at it as, hey, we took care of business? It was a 35-7 win. The offense showed something early. Are you hanging your hat on that? Are you finding yourself wondering, why did everything slow down?
Well, to be most accurate, I bleed blue and white, but I was also drinking blue and light. So I was good.
You're both, yeah.
Yeah. I'm actually the glass half full guy. And yeah. I was at the game and I heard a lot of reaction from the fans. There was a lot of glass half empty, which you win 35-7 and you're disappointed. I guess that's the good sign, is it shows where the expectation level is. They pitched essentially a perfect game against Maryland the week before.
Right.
When you come out and score touchdowns on your first four possessions, I guess I wasn't as down on the team the rest of the way as other folks were. I know they had, I believe, one or two, three and outs, but they did kind of move the ball late in the game when they had what I'll call the Noah Cain drive. Instead of just talking about it in the headset, they actually did it.
Yeah, I imagine that, yeah.
And I felt like they did take their foot off the gas a bit, but I'm the glass half full guy on this one.
And you hate to, you know, it's five games into the year. You hate to keep leaning on certain things, but there's, I think the identity of the offense, it's still very young. And when you're redshirt sophomore quarterback is embarking and running into things, and he's the tone setter. You know, he's the most important position on the field, obviously. He's not the only player on the field, so you don't put, you know, everything on the quarterback. But, you know, Dan Orlovsky on the broadcast said something interesting about, you know, setting that tone for his offense was one of his boxes to check for Sean Clifford. And, you know, in the second half, that's just something where It is easy to feel not lackadaisical, but it's easy to kind of go through the motions. It's easy to not feel the same kind of urgency when you're storming out to this big lead. You're never really going to be threatened in this game. How do you keep your foot on the gas? I think this was a lesson for Sean Clifford. I think there were some lessons in the second half for him, for the offensive line, for Ricky Ronnie. The way that Purdue was showing a lot of guys at the line of scrimmage and really kind of flustering and gumming things up, it was a good adjustment on their part. And Penn State didn't really have the urgency, I think, to really adjust back to that, which I think explains some of that. But I really do think, you know, a lot of these situations are firsts for a lot of players on this team. And I don't think you can discount that. You can't use it as an excuse forever, but I think this game situation and the way it felt with this three game stretch coming up ahead, with them having built such a big lead, it's hard to maintain the same kind of energy they maintained for four quarters against Maryland, against a team like this, in a situation like this. They knew what Purdue was coming in. You know, I just think they lost urgency, and James Franklin even said it. I think we'll hear this quote from him later. You know, like, we don't really stand for that around here. But that, I think that's what happened.
And I also think there's a bit of trying to adjust to the talent they have. I don't know if I'm the only one who feels this way, but on the offense, and James Franklin has talked about the team with the most explosive plays wins. And I think sometimes they're trying to force that. And I'm not sure they have that receiver like Chris Godwin or even Isaiah Blacknall, who you just put it up there for them and they'll go get it. But this team does seem to have the type where you throw it underneath and let them go. The play to Jahan Dotson obviously was an explosive play, was pretty far downfield, but it wasn't beyond the defense.
Right.
And this looks like a team, to me anyway, that can drive the ball down the field and has enough playmakers who could turn those 10, 15-yard gains into a 50, 60-yard gain. And I feel like this is a team that could have that kind of offense. And early on, those were the things that they were doing. The one last thing to point out on the where the team stalled a bit, there were a couple missed opportunities. Now, again, they missed them, so that's a check mark against them.
Sure.
But they were there. The interception by Sean Clifford was just underthrown.
Yeah.
Hamler had his guy beat. I know when Clifford released the ball, it reminds me, who was the NFL receiver who said, if we're even, I'm leaving. You know, he's going to leave the defender behind. That's KJ Hamler.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was left behind. They lost another possession when the punt hit Sutherland. Well, it happened a couple times where their players got hit on with the punts and they lost possession. So
it's a whole separate story, too. Oh, yeah.
Yes, it is. So a couple things didn't go their way that can be cleaned up. So it wasn't like, gee, this Purdue defense is just too much for them.
Yeah.
No, I never said that.
It definitely wasn't that. I think it was just a slew of different factors. And, you know, but in the end, I mean, they have 24 first downs of Purdue's 8, 196 rushing yards, and Purdue had minus 19, held Purdue to 104 total yards. On paper, you know, this was a bloodbath. I just think that with that Friday night game against Maryland, the way they started out, you know, there were high expectations. And execution for all these different things that you mentioned, you know, the execution just wasn't where Penn State wanted it to be later in this game. And you don't think there's going to be any kind of carryover, but this will be an interesting stretch ahead because the issue that they had against Purdue probably won't be present for the next stretch of the season.
I don't believe
urgency
so.
Should not be a problem coming up. It's the Keystone Kickoff Show. We're talking Penn State, Purdue, 35-7. Penn State wins 5-0. They are now going into the real crucial stretch of the season. I call it coin flip season. Iowa, Michigan, Michigan State. These were the games I think on paper that had coin flip potential. You don't really consider Ohio State a coin flip just because they are who they are. But these matchups I felt like were the ones that were going to define the season. And we're at that point now.
Especially when it's Iowa on the road, Michigan State on the road.
Yep.
We've seen over the last couple of years what could happen there. Let me ask you a question. Let me turn the table on
you. Sure.
I'm sure you had it in your notes somewhere, but everyone's still talking about the running backs.
Yeah.
Where are you with that? I know Noah Kane had a really nice game. Is Ricky Slade falling down the depth chart?
It's hard to say that he's not, right? You know, I didn't really come into this season believing and even to the, even up until this moment, I didn't really think four guys, one of these guys has to transfer. I never really had that thought. That thought is starting to creep into my head a little bit because, you know, you as a guy, the oldest, you know, most accomplished guy on this young running back depth chart, you can only go so long without creating any running room for yourself and still maintain an even footing in this competition. That's just where we're at. Like, I don't have Slade's. I'll pull his season stats up in a minute. But his season numbers are not pretty. And, you know, it's almost like, you know who he looks like to me is Andre Robinson.
Yes.
And I don't think I mean that as a compliment or an insult. Like, that's just who I see when I look at him. And you saw, you know, Andre's doing some good things at Delaware now. But He just isn't creating anything.
Well, here's the question I have for Ricky about Ricky Slade, though. When you watch his high school tapes, and I'm even talking about in camps where he's outside, guys couldn't even get touch him, let alone tackle him.
Yeah.
Is how often have you seen Penn State take advantage of that skill set? And I rewatched the game again and focused on Ricky Slade and his possessions. Well, they were doing the Journey Brown had the first two drives, Ricky Slade the second two. There really was nothing there. And a couple times I even felt Sean Clifford did him a disservice giving him the ball as opposed to keeping it himself.
Yeah.
And but how often do they has Ricky Slade run outside the tackles or been given the ball passing it to him where he is out in the open where he could make people
I can
mess.
Think of one or two times when he and to me this is kind of the essence of the issue of having four running backs is that they each do multiple somethings well that differentiate them from the other. How are you realistically as a play caller going to be able to create and situations where you're able to utilize all these different things?
And if you look at the number of carries just for this game alone, where Journey Brown gets the first two drives, Ricky Slade the next two, and remember, they scored four touchdowns on those four drives, if you want to judge them that way.
Right.
But they end the game with Ricky Slade with four carries and Journey Brown with five.
Yeah.
A total of nine carries between the two of them, and those are your two first and second team running backs.
I'm a believer in having a number one wide receiver. I'm a believer in that. I'm not a believer in force feeding that number one wide receiver to the detriment of the flow of your offense, to the detriment of the other players around them. I'm also a believer in a pecking order at running back. You know, four is too many. Everybody knows four is too many. You hear them, you read between the lines, James Franklin, Jay Wansider, they all believe four is too many. But they don't, you know, all these guys, you don't want to punish any of these guys either. So that's the tricky part. I think for sure Noah Cain has been the most consistent presence of these guys. He's the one who's thrived the most in this uncertain, unable to get enough really volume to get into a rhythm. This is the setting that they're in. And maybe that hurts Ricky Slade. You know, maybe he's a guy who needs a little bit of steam before he can really get moving. There's a lot of running backs like that. So maybe he's just not thriving in this scenario where there's so many mouths to feed. But, you know, 2.1 yards per carry through five games, that number, you can explain away some of that. But that number is what it is right now.
And at what point does it become a large enough sample size to come to some conclusions?
And I think we might be nearing that point, trying to read between the lines what James Franklin had to say. We will, of course, hear that a little bit later in the show. We're not done talking Penn State, Purdue. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back talking about this defense, 10 sacks against this Purdue team. We'll be right back.
Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light want to remind you that fall is the best season. Why? Because of football. Leaves. Fantasy football, flannel, beards, tailgating, oh yeah, and more football. Welcome to the best season ever. Grab some Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Cause it's time to get undomesticated. Beer. Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York. Always enjoy responsibly.
Hey, Penn State fans, here is your chance to take something off your bucket list. That's right. GoPSU RV is offering a full range of RV setups ready for a weekend of great tailgating at their Lions Den, which is the closest single-game RV overnight lot to Beaver Stadium. You can arrive anytime Friday afternoon. Stay until Sunday morning, avoiding all that traffic. Don't miss this unique opportunity. Go online to GoPSURV.com and reserve your RV today.
Life gets complicated, and it only gets more complicated when things change, which is why AAA insurance agents take the time to talk with you so that they can help you choose the best auto and home coverage. Don't put off getting protected. Let AAA help cover what you care about. Insurance that's not just insurance. Talk to your local AAA insurance agent or visit AAA.com to learn more about AAA.